Hey, my friend, Dub.
What's
Alexander.
Going on, brother?
It's good to see you, man.
Likewise, man.
We got to co-host a podcast together.
That was fun, man, for sure.
Yeah, man, I loved doing it with you, and it's right up your alley. We had Caleb Campbell on. He's got a book coming out called Disarming Leviathan, where he is, what's the subtitle? He's pastoring, or he's got a ministry to Christian nationalists.
Yeah, it's loving your Christian nationalist neighbor.
That's it.
Yeah. Which I felt was perfect phrasing, because it's not, you know, in the charismatic streams, it's always beware of this, or, you know, how to take down this or that, you know. And he's just coming at it from, man, the answer is love. And so how can we love the people that have just, you know, gotten caught up in some ideology that's just not Christ-centric or Christ-like?
Yeah. What would Jesus do? I mean, it really was that simple.
Are we bringing the bracelets back?
What's that?
I said, are we bringing the bracelets back?
In a little bit, there'll be something at the bottom of the screen where you can order.
Oh, but, my goodness.
But seriously, it was that simple. We weren't having a conversation about left or right. We were having a conversation about hearts and minds that have been arrested by fear and are participating in things that aren't Christ-centric, that don't look like greater love, that and so Caleb is really truly looking at it as a ministry. I loved the conversation, and it got deeper and deeper. Man, I appreciate your flavor as well. I mean, this is your wheelhouse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime that we're able to remove, I don't like my theology and my politics to mix, man. I love government. I hate politics. And so anytime we see those two things starting to get mixed up, all of a sudden, man, like there's a lot of dishonor involved. And man, it's never a good mix. And so I'm glad that he's addressing it. I really love the way that he's approaching it. And he's giving some, you brought it up, that he's really crafting some good language that will help in some articulation in the context of family gatherings and places where this is being brought up, and it's awkward right now because of the lack of language and the lack of honor.
And he's got the authority to do it, which you noted. He's navigated. He was a skinhead, right? That encountered the kindness of God through relational people that loved him well. And so he's speaking from a place of authority. He's been loved well by Jesus, and he's not othering anyone. He really is endeavoring to put language around this as we head into this election year. So, man, I loved doing this with you. I love doing everything with you, man. Like, it's been so fun. It's like I found a brother that I never knew I had. So this is good, bro.
Yes, sir.
So, hey, guys, join up on the Facebook. Rethinking God with Tacos. You go to familystory.org, and you can follow us there, get on our email list, and you'll keep up with books and books that are coming out. We've got events we're doing, and we're actually going to be partnering doing. Let's talk about that a little bit, man.
Yeah, that's going to be a blast. In May, we're doing the Kingdom Reformers Conference. The theme this year is Reforming Theology with Tacos. And so you're going to be one of the keynote speakers at that conference. That'll probably be the first time we get to meet each other face to face. And so looking forward to that. And so if that's something you're interested in, just being a part of those sessions, you can find that at kingdomreformers.com.
And where else? What else are you doing, man? Anything else you can share? Just let folks know. I mean, most folks know you, but for those that are...
No, I appreciate it, man. The podcast, The Joe Kingman Perspective, you can catch myself, Dr. Tony Robinson, and the Ryan Pena on there every Monday. And we're just talking about, hey, let's take a look at some clips from the Joe Rogan Experience, and as he's interviewing different brilliant minds from around the world with the intent of observing just how the kingdom is advancing in the most unexpected of places, in the most unexpected of ways, and through the most unexpected of people. So if you need a dose of hope in your week, that's a good podcast for you. If you're not easily offended.
It's a lot of fun too, man. I love it. You guys have some fun, and it's good. Guys, this was an incredible conversation with Caleb Campbell. On his book, Disarming Leviathan. I pray it blesses.
Great.
All right. Caleb Campbell, Dub Alexander, and I are excited to have you here, man. Excited to have a conversation with you.
What's up?
Got a book coming out, Disarming Leviathan, July 2, right?
Yeah, or if you want to, you could buy it on the 4th of July and treat yourself.
It'll be out just in time for your 4th of July celebrations. Take it. Make sure you pick up a copy. Take it to the barbecues you're going to.
Ooh, we start
marketing.
Yeah, right off the bat, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, right off the bat. Bro, you're a pastor. Tell me where you are. Give us a little bit. You're in Desert Springs, right?
Arizona? Desert Springs Bible Church, Phoenix, Arizona. So we're a 47-year-old non-denominational Bible church in North Phoenix. I've been here at the church since about 2000, 2001. Came on staff in 06, lead pastor in 2015. And so I met the Lord at this church, and now I get to serve as one of their pastors. So I'm loving it.
Dude, you got family, kids.
Yep. Wife, 4 kids. Let's see, what's the range now? 5 to 13. So hey, we're in full effect, as they
say.
You're in it. Yes.
You're in it, bro.
We are.
We'd love to talk. We're going to dive into this book, but bro, the heartbeat behind this podcast is rethinking God. We'll get to the tacos part later, but I mean, we're trying to have better thoughts about the goodness of God today than we had yesterday. I mean, that's the simple approach. It's really what we're doing. And so typically we'll start by asking you a little bit about your journey, a little bit what got you here. I've read enough. I haven't read the book because it hasn't come out yet, but I've read and watched some things. I know Dub has as well. Would love to know how you found yourself writing this book, addressing Christian nationalism.
Yeah, it's a great question. So Phoenix is kind of like one of the places where there's a lot of folks advocating for Christian nationalist ideas in the American church. And from 2016 to 2020, I was getting these kind of sparks coming up out of the congregation, people in a Bible study or Sunday school class or community group. They'd kind of be getting more animated than I was used to seeing them be animated. Their speech became nastier, their engagement on social media became more volatile. And I just watched this rise and rise and rise in the congregation with people who I've shared communion with for, you know, sometimes over a decade.
Right.
And 2020 hits, you know, every church I know goes into crisis mode, and we're navigating all of the massive decisions that we had to make, whether it was how to respond to COVID-19 or George Floyd or the federal election, whatever it might be.
Right.
And almost, it didn't really matter what decision you made. The fact that things were happening and you made a decision meant that you get resistance. I think every pastor that I know in that season that happened to. But it hit us especially hard. So about 80% of the people that were in our congregation in 2016 were no longer there by the end of 2020. And a lot of the reasons for departure or choosing to go to another church was how we were postured towards those issues. And I was struck by how many people felt that way, and also how they were now referring to the church and me and our leadership. Our leadership was in lockstep during that whole time. Our lead team was in lockstep that whole time. But there was obviously a disconnect between where we were at and where a lot of the congregation was at. And what one of the things that I saw rising up is what I would later refer to and now refer to as American Christian nationalism. And I watched people kind of choosing to attend churches that were publicly advocating for those, not only those ideals, but the posture and the character of the American Christian nationalist movement. So this is about 2021, I started getting invited to some of the rallies, but they didn't call them rallies, they called them revivals. And that struck me. So I started just attending as many of these events as I could. I signed up for all the newsletters. I joined all the Zoom meetings and stuff like that, because I wanted to figure it out. And because a lot of it sounds like conservatism, you know, but there was something else about it. And a lot of it kind of sounds like evangelicalism, but there was something off. And so because of what had happened to our church from 2016 to 2020 and starting in 2021, the most frequent question I was getting was passed from the people that I shepherd was, Pastor Caleb, how do I deal with my Aunt Betty, my cousin Steve, Uncle Jim, my daughter, my son? Because they're saying things that make me feel afraid. and or did it just seem outrageous? Or, you know, sweet Aunt Betty is yelling about immigrants at our 12-year-old's birthday party, and I don't know what to do.
Right.
And so I set out to create material or training that we could use in our own congregation to understand what was going on. And then also, more important to me, was how to engage with people in a Jesus-centered way. So that's how I got started on the project, and that's where we're at now.
One of the things I was watching some of your videos, and you were talking about the you had, I believe, coined the phrase of ethnic erasure, and how that's really at the root of this movement of the Christian nationalist agenda. And I was hoping that you could kind of unpack that for us, because I felt like that was a brilliant definition that really brought a lot of clarity to what was behind this current movement.
Yeah. So one of the questions that I wanted to explore was, why are so many people that I love who follow Jesus giving themselves over wholeheartedly, not primarily to political ideology, but to a posture towards people that's combative, dehumanizing, nasty? It exhibits a lot of the fruit of the spirit of this world, not the spirit of the Lord. And through the research, kind of came to a way of talking about it, that the majority of people who are clinging to American Christian nationalism are anxious about ethnic erasure, meaning they are constantly being stirred up by purveyors of American Christian nationalism that their way of being in the world is under imminent threat, that those people, the enemies, the outsiders, whoever it might be, that they're invading, they're taking over. And so because we feel like our way of being in the world is under imminent threat, we will therefore rally together and fight to take power back. The issue with Americans, however, is that for the majority of white Americans, especially if you're second generation or further down the line in your immigration story, many white Americans that I know don't have a sense of their ethnos, the people that they come from. I've loved doing my family tree. I've been able to trace it back to the 1400s, which is pretty cool. But I've got people, you know, Scotland, Ireland, Britain, Germany, Holy Roman Empire, actually some of them. But that's not shaped who I am. Growing up, I was just American. But the problem is, being an American is to be committed to an idea, not to be from a certain people. So I'm an American, and my buddy Terry Wildman, who's Native American, is also American. And my friends who are Cajun are also American, and they have a firm understanding of their ethnos, their ethnicity. I think a lot of white Americans don't. And so they substitute Christian for the type of people that they are. And this is why some folks will use the language of white Christian nationalism, because they're trying to get at that idea of an ethnos, an identifiable people group. I've chosen American Christian nationalist, because that's how they self-identify usually. But it's this stirring up of anxiety that they as a people, or we as a people, are under imminent threat from people who are also our neighbors, which again gets back to this like conflict with democracy and pluralism. And so being stirred up, we are, Jesus followers are often tempted when we feel anxiety to reach not for the cross, but for the sword. And American Christian nationalism advocates for sword power over cross power because we're under threat. So therefore, it's justifiable.
Yeah. I love the, I know folks may be listening, and before we hit record, you asked what our audience was like. And I said, you know, our audience are rethinking the nature of God in light of who Jesus revealed him as. And probably have left some of the institutional models of church, but they haven't left Jesus.
Yep.
And yet we've probably got folks that will vote Democrat, folks that will vote Republican.
Yeah.
And it's almost impossible to have a conversation like this that doesn't get polarized, that people don't feel like defensive. Mm-hmm. Even that term Christian nationalism can cause, because in fairness, politics are ugly, and that term has been used to propagate, and it's been used to mock and criticize on both sides
Yep.
and of the political spectrum. And so we're not having that conversation. One of the things I loved when I was reading a little bit, there was an article that I was reading about you expected to find monsters when mm-hmm. you went to these rallies, because a whole lot of what was coming is not the Jesus we know. It isn't another centered, self-giving love, a Christocentric, cruciform love. And so you're confused because Aunt Betty's amazing. Aunt Betty's makes right. the best pot roast on the planet. What's going on? And what you discovered when you went to these rallies or these revivals, which some of that language that's been usurped, a lot of times we like to use the language of family or the language of religion mm-hmm. To manipulate and control. But you got there and you didn't find monsters. You found right. brothers and sisters who are afraid, who are fearful. That's the conversation we're having. That's why you consider yourself a pastor to Christian, right? This is a ministry yep. to Christian nationalists. I love that. Break that down. Break sure. down how, because this isn't about us and them. That's the opposite of what we're trying to do right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about conservative or progressive. And just a quick point, Christian nationalism is politically, it's three things. It's a political ideology, it's a tribal identity, and it's a spiritual idolatry. As a political ideology, Christian nationalism is not inherently conservative or progressive. It's just the idea that a certain people group, namely Christians, right. should run the state. That's it. How they run the state, I mean, there's examples of Christian nationalism that are propagating what we in America would refer to as progressive ideals. So it just so happens that American Christian nationalism right now is kind of tethered with a conservative bent, but that is not the case for all Christian nationalism. It's not inherently conservative sure. or progressive.
Right. Wow.
The rallies and the revivals and the events that I went into because almost all my exposure was one through media, social media, television, and two, through people being nasty to me, to be frank, just nastiness. And so I'm just like, okay, well, that's how these people are. And then I start hanging out and I realize, oh, they're me.
Yeah.
This is the big aha moment is they're me. They feel anxious about fear of loss of something that they hold precious.
Yeah.
And they're reaching for the sword. You know what I do? I do the exact same thing when I feel fear and anxiety about losing something that's precious to me. It's just right. the sword that I reach for is slightly different than the sword they reach for. And so when we can recognize that all of us, like Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Come we on, feel man. Anxious of loss, our instinct is reach for the sword, even while Jesus is reaching for the cross.
There you go.
Beautiful. That in those moments, we're all like Peter.
Yeah.
Then I approach with, or at least I'm invited to approach someone who's spewing hate speech or anxiety laden talk tracks. I approach them knowing I do that too.
Yeah.
It's just the topic's different.
Yeah.
And so I want to approach not as a, and this is the language that I've grown fond of using, is I want to approach people as a missionary, not a colonizer. A missionary, a good missionary. I know there's a lot of bad stuff about missionaries, but a good missionary, just come with me. A good missionary wants to see the people they're trying to reach find Jesus, be reconciled, be redeemed, and express that in their own unique cultural way. A colonizer says, I want you to be like me.
Yeah.
And so I had to come to this moment of thinking, okay, like, I don't want them to stop eating a Cracker Barrel. I want them to follow Jesus. And even if the expression of that Jesus following, I may find distasteful or uncouth or whatever, that's not a them problem. That's a me problem.
Come on, man.
My judgment, my derision, my dehumanizing posture towards this group of people, that's not their problem. That's my problem. And so 98% of this work is in me, not in them. And so when I can be in that space, I found that my heart is more open, A, to them through hospitality, and B, and this one sucks. When I'm in that space, my heart is more open to seeing what God wants to change in me through them.
Come on, bro.
And I do not like that because I don't like them. I don't like their music. I don't like their accoutrement. I don't like their art. I don't like the way they talk. I think I'm better than them. I've got my act together. I'm a solid Christian. I'm a pastor, for goodness sakes. What do they have to teach me? But when I recognize that, oh, we're all in the same playing field. I mean, there's this old statement that all ground is equal at the foot of the cross.
That's it.
And that the Lord not only, I think, wants to change something in them, but he really wants to change something in me.
Bro.
So Galatians 6, 1 and 2, it's my touchstone. It says, if any one of you is caught up in a transgression or an evil or wrongdoing, you who are spiritually mature, seek to restore that person gently. And watch out for your own self, lest you too be tempted. Therefore, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ, which is love your neighbor as yourself. Beautiful. And I love that because it's gentle. The objective is not obliteration, but restoration. And it recognizes that a ton of the work is in me. I've got to carry that burden of my own gross when I enter into relationship with them.
Come on. I really appreciate what you're bringing to the table here, man. I've worked in governments in different nations around the world for the last 7 years. And I love government. I hate politics. And, you know, on earth as it is in heaven, there's definitely government in heaven, but there's no politics in heaven. I like to say that politics is the dirty game that's played on the field of government. And it was really sad to see how divisive it was, you know, has been over the last, you know, 8 years or so. And that language that you're using, I've come to a lot of the same conclusions, but with ambassador language versus missionary language, that the ambassador comes to add value, but not to conform or control. And so, I'm so tracking with you. I love what you're putting down here. And I was curious as to the why you're using Leviathan. What was the imagery of that, and how are you tying that into the whole picture? Because
this, if you are watching this on video, I'm showing you a crocheted red, white, and blue Leviathan. This is my very disarming Leviathan.
Nice.
So I love to show him off. He watches over me on my podcast, make sure I do a good job. Yeah, so the reason that we chose the disarming Leviathan, so the book title is called Disarming Leviathan, Loving Your Christian Nationalist Neighbor. And the ministry that I started for all this is called Disarming Leviathan. And it comes from this, well, number one, let's start with the most important thing. It sounds like a heavy metal album. And that was my objective. Even if no one buys the book, it still sounds so cool. Like, and I'm a child of the 90s and heavy metal was my jam. So that's one big reason. Number two, in the scripture, there's this figure, the Leviathan. You find it in like the book of Job and Psalms. There's also corollary figures like the serpent in the Garden of Eden, the chaos, abysmal waters that like if you're familiar with the Jonah story, there's like that giant beast that swallows him up from the chaos waters of the abyss. In the book of Revelation, there's the beast and the dragon. And in the biblical mind, at least in my understanding, these are all kind of corollary ways of talking about chaos, evil. And the biblical authors have this in their imagination. They understood that humans can tap into that chaos, evil power. Usually people have great earthly power who lord it over others in acts of domination or warfare. That some of the prophets actually will refer to human kings. They've become so much like the dragon that they're almost like identified with the dragon. Now, I don't believe that the scripture teaches us that people are pure evil or chaos evil, but we can get so connected to that source of chaos evil that it consumes us. Very similar to how many forms of drug abuse will consume a person, so too being connected to that chaos power can consume a person, but there's always hope for redemption. I think the scriptures are clear of that. But it's this way of talking about chaos evil and the power of chaos evil that can be used to dominate, usually through division and fear or anxiety. and rage. So the fruit of the kingdoms of this world are what happens when leaders lead according to the power of the Leviathan. It stirs up chaos. So what God wants to order in the cosmos, Genesis 1 is God ordering the cosmos for human flourishing. The Leviathan is a agent of disorder and chaos.
Gotcha.
And what I see in what's happening, at least in my community, and I don't want to speak for the whole church or the American church, just in my community, I see fear-mongering, anxiety-inducing talk tracks, dehumanizing and derisive hate speech that generate disintegration in spaces where Jesus wants to create integration or reintegration.
Come on.
So I wanted to just recognize that this thing that's happening, it's not new. No. So American Christian nationalism sounds new, but it's just the thing that we've known that's been happening since Cain looked at Abel and said, you know what I should do to my brother? Mm-hmm. I should disintegrate him. And we know what to do. See, this is, I'm not actually adding anything new to the conversation. We know what to do when we see agents of disintegration operating in our community. We behave like Jesus.
Come on.
And through the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, we see reintegration. And we can live that now. You said it, Dub, just a second ago. We live on earth as it is in heaven.
Yeah.
Go.
So my brother or sister who votes for the other team, the red team or the blue team or whatever, green team, libertarian team.
Yeah.
Because I recognize that we are agents of reconciliation, that we live on earth as it is in heaven, I can properly order my voting self as a tertiary or lower level of importance and identity.
Come on.
What American Christian nationalism does is it takes those that political posture and tribal identity, and it makes it a primary thing, and it syncs it up with your Christian identity. So in this sense, it's a blatant form of syncretism. You'll hear people say things like, if you vote for that team, you cannot call yourself a Christian.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we've strayed definitively into syncretism, and it's disordering the allegiances.
So well said, man. I always was fascinated by how Jesus said to be aware of the leaven of Herod, which to me would be that political mindset, political divisive mindset, and the leaven of the Pharisees, which is the divisive religious mindset. And what we've been seeing over these past few years is the alliance of those two flying under the radar, you know, with the label of, unfortunately, the kingdom or whatever it is, you know, that is being used there. And it's and like you said, it goes back 2,000 years, like, and further, right? But Jesus identified it for us 2,000 years ago, and we've missed that is the yeast that is at play. But we're the yeast of the kingdom. So when we choose to show up in that mix as Jesus, right?
Yep.
1 John 4:17, as he is, so are we here in this world. That is what disarms that that beast. So, man, I love your language, bro.
One real quick note, too, about the disarming. So we don't defeat Leviathan. But we can disentangle, like Galatians 6:1-2, if anyone's ensnared in a transgression. We can invite people out of that because the victory is already won in Christ. So the issue is that the person is embracing Leviathan and Leviathan responds in kind. But anyone who at any moment hears the good news and turns, the shackles are off. And so it's not a destructive posture. It's not a combative posture. It's a freedom posture. Where it's calling people to take off the chains.
Yeah.
It's not calling people to rise up and conquer somebody. That's already happened.
Come on, man.
And it happened through the laying down of his life. It was done in the context of a greater love that laid his life down for us, his friends.
Yes.
I'm going to ask about, I've learned so much about Peter in the Garden of Gethsemane. I've written about it. I'm fascinated by what took place there. And so you touching on it, You know, I've talked about the fact that Peter, out of his love, his actual sincere love for Jesus, but in the context of his fractured understanding of the kingdom, operated in fear violently outside of what Christ is like, literally outside of who Christ is.
Yep.
Jesus actually said it's a sifting of Satan. And so I'm fascinated by that because I know what it is. I know what it is to swing my sword out of my fear in, you know, I'll tell you, I love Jesus and I'm swinging my sword out of my passionate love of Jesus, but really I'm swinging it out to defend my ideology. I have a statement that I'm not here to defend. I'm here to reveal.
Yep.
Come on.
And so my question for you is how, because you're saying, oh man, it's really, but I'm like, well, how do you navigate it? Because I look at that and I think Jesus is praying for my faith, right? He's praying for, hey, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. You have a perspective about my kingdom that is nothing like me, nothing like the example I've given to you. But Satan has asked to sift you. He's got access. Essentially, I didn't tell Satan he can sift you. You did. He's got access to your thoughts because you have a flawed understanding on your lens regarding what the kingdom looks like.
Come on.
But don't worry, I'm praying for your faith.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of this, you'll be friends to your brothers, or you'll be life. You're going to be life to your brothers. So there's another side of this. How have you personally navigated that? Because, you know, you said it's difficult, but I'm like, yeah, but it's the gospel.
Yeah.
we're invited into that, into the laying down of our swords.
It's me. I mean, the transformative power of the gospel worked on me.
Yeah.
So I know it works. Back when I was, I think this is in the 90s, there's this old commercial and it was like the hair club for men. So like dudes who were balding and you would buy this, you know, shampoo or something. And it was, but this guy would come in and he would say, the owner, he said, I'm not only the owner, I'm also a client. And it was this bit that he did to say, I am buying what I'm selling. I know it works. I want you to receive it because I know it works.
Yeah.
So for me, before meeting Jesus, I was a neo-Nazi skinhead. I mean, I was terrified of whatever. And, I felt like I needed safety, belonging, and purpose. And I found it in this movement. And then when I got into it, you start realizing like, oh, this is a facade. There's no integrity here. Like what's being said and what's actually being done are not integrated. And so, leaving that and then finding that, and this is the strange part, well, strange, but beautiful part. I found it through a place that I resented, namely the local church. And it was from the hospitality of a couple that I had nothing in common with. I mean, bro, like heavy metal, skinhead, blow stuff up guy, anger's like the one emotion, and it's always an 11. And this couple, newlywed, like this guy, he's wearing slacks. Do you understand? He's wearing a polo shirt. He's from a golfing community. His teeth are all straight and shiny. He's got like a natural tan. I hate this guy.
No kidding, man. Oh my God. I feel it.
You had, I mean, and his polo shirt was salmon, but that's what he said. I'm like, that's pink. He's like, it's salmon.
That's
and
too
my
far right
22 year ago self, was intrigued when he and his wife said, why don't you come over for dinner? We'll have a couple beers and we'll talk about what makes you angry about religion. And I was like, oh, cool. Well, A, I was like, beer. So I'm not advocating for that. I'm not trying to promote that for anybody. It just, that's where I was at the time. And we did. We had dinner and he let me rant and rave and he didn't fight with me. He just said, oh, that's interesting. That thing you just said. Hold on just a minute. And he'd go get his Bible, bring it over, open it up to the Gospels. He's like, yeah, read that part. I think Jesus says something similar. I think Jesus agrees with you.
Come on.
Wow.
And I was like, cool, that's cool. And but this is the important part. He invited me back the next week. And he and his wife invited me in. And they showed me hospitality.
Wow.
They showed me dignity.
Come on.
They listened to what I was saying, even though what I was saying was absolutely outrageous. And rage filled.
Right.
He found a thread in what I was saying that was coming from my heart that he could connect back to Jesus.
Yeah.
And over a year of that, I found myself following Jesus. So, and that's been my life the rest of the time. I mean, when I'm caught up in transgression, when I'm caught up in anxiety or rage or disappointment or whatever it might be, it's oftentimes through the hospitality or love of others that I see Jesus most clearly. And I'm never fond of when people tell me I'm wrong. But there's something about when they model a better way and then invite me to participate in it that I find very attractive. And I find myself doing it almost subconsciously. Then you look back and you're like, geez, I really changed. And so when I'm with people, and my encouragement to anyone is the folks that are in your life that are maybe causing you anxiety when they talk, or they're just losing their cool at the 12-year-old's birthday party, or they're posting, you know, bigoted stuff on social media, whatever it might be. That's all coming from a space. They're posting head stuff, right? Facts, opinions, data. Did you guys see this thing at the border? But that is an expression of something that's exponentially deeper that's going on in their heart.
Yeah.
If we choose to engage people head to head, we're going nowhere.
That's right?
Arguing about facts and data. What's your sources? That sounds like a conspiracy theory. You might be totally right.
Right.
They don't care, because that is making sense of something that's going on in the heart. So my invitation for people and my posture is, let's see if we can connect heart to heart.
Come on.
How do you feel when you say that? I feel fear, Aunt Betty.
Yeah.
When I saw that thing you posted, that my first instinct was, we got to do something about this. And I'm so glad you care deeply about this.
Yeah.
And then invite them. How do you feel? What's going on inside of your heart? Tell me a story that helps me understand why this is important to you. And then if there's an opportunity, bring Jesus back into the conversation. Hey, that thing about immigration, you know, I feel a lot of fear around that. But I've been reading a lot in the Bible about caring for immigrants. And Jesus said that thing, like, if you welcome the stranger, you welcome me. And I feel tension in my heart about how do we honor the teaching of Jesus on the one hand and be safe on the other hand. What do you think? And all I'm trying to do is invite my counterpart to do what I need to do all the time too, which is think deeply about how Jesus might want to transform my imagination about something that I care about.
Hey guys, interrupting for a second. Glad you're here. So thankful for this podcast. Thankful to get to do this with friends. Thankful for Derek and all of those who've navigated it with us. Listen, this podcast is done under our nonprofit, A Family Story. 12 years ago, I had a vision and I wrote it down. I'm going to read it to you. Family Story is a relational community of creatives, family and friends. I see all of us as creatives. We do life together. We envision and express God's love through our gifting and grace. We are worshipers, dreamers, storytellers, and preachers, a family of dads and moms, brothers and sisters, daughters and sons, united by a passion to know and reveal God's perfect love. I feel like I'm seeing the fulfillment of some of that vision 12 years ago. The mandate on A Family Story was to create media content catalytic for an encounter with the love of God. AFamilyStory.org is our website. I encourage you to go there. There's a whole lot of media content there. There's books and articles. There's films, some music, and this podcast. That's the home of Rethinking God with Tacos, which is pretty dang cool. It's been life-giving, as I said, the community around it, the community of creatives, of family and friends that's growing. It's blown me away. And so I'm thankful. I'm thankful for all the relationships, connections, and I'm thankful for all those who've given. Rethinking God with Tacos is listener-supported. If you'd like to support us, you can go to afamilystory.org. Again, we're a nonprofit. And I would encourage you to join us on our Facebook group. Follow us on Instagram, all the socials. If you're curious how to find me on the socials, it's @JasonClarkIs. Otherwise, like, share, write a review on iTunes or Spotify. Tell your mom. We really are loving doing this, and I'm so thankful for everyone here. All right, it's time to get back to the podcast.
Yeah, so good, man. And to reposition people into, let's not look for a side, let's look for a solution.
Yeah.
I feel that the original intent of government is all protective in nature, and it's to protect the sovereignty of a territory, the opportunity of a citizenry, and the rights of humanity. And so the reason that immigration is always a hot button issue every election year is because it lands between the tension of those two truths. How does a government protect the sovereignty of a territory, the opportunity of its citizenry, and the rights of humanity? And it's going to take the wisdom of God in order for us to find heaven's solution to this earthly problem. But when we're battling with the data and all that, we're still operating from that logic of man rather than from the logic of God. And so instead of choosing a side, man, we need to choose the strategies and solutions of heaven and begin to push in. Man, if we put half of the energy that we put into division and choosing who's right, who's wrong, and all that into just pursuing God's heart for humanity. I loved all that language you're using about restoring dignity, operating in honor, compassion, all of that. Oh man, we'd be a lot further on than we are, but I do think that things are shifting in that direction.
Yeah.
I've been super encouraged that, and I even went onto my wife's Facebook to poke around a little bit, because I was like, maybe I like curated my circle so much that I'm not seeing as much hot nonsense as I was 4 years ago. But really, there is a lot less of just total people losing their minds as there was 4 years ago. And I think it's because a lot of people were exhausted by that process and saw that really no good fruit came out of it. And so they're being a little more low key, and I'm appreciating that, seeing the kingdom advance in that way. So
yeah, for sure.
And I see books like yours, there's more and more language being put around it, more and more. What I love about what you shared, man, I could totally see the metal, by the way. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, oh yeah. But I have this phrase. I'm a relational theologian or a practical theologian. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work in a relationship, I'm really not too, I just lose interest. I'm like, it gets too heady. I'm like, and even what you shared, it's the kindness of God that leads us to change the way we think.
Yep.
And even your salvation experience, if you will, was a relational or practical theology worked out through kindness that was able to say, hey, I'm not here to defend. I'm here to reveal the love of God. And he is right where you are right now. He's walking down every row with every one of us. It values what you're feeling. It values where you're at. And now we can have a conversation, because I think everything is built on trust. Trust is the thing. You know, if you're a relational guy, then everything matters. Everything's about trust. And trust is something that's built. It's earned over time. And I think a lot of what you're saying, Dub, is I feel it too. We still got an election coming. So it's coming. It's here. But there's language. There's folks that are providing, hey, can we take a step back? It's not caustic, man. I appreciate that you're looking at it going, hey, I love my brothers and sisters who are caught up based in their fear, caught up in this thing that's, by the way, being leveraged and used on a daily basis through the news media, through, you know, anybody that can use it to gain power, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just appreciate that that's what's happening. I don't have a question yet. Hold on. Do you have any thoughts, or should I form one?
Man, I'm just here to bask in y'all's wisdom. So you got the questions.
Oh my goodness.
No,
I second what Jason was saying about the language. I think that you can feel that something is off, and you can even feel that there is a better alternative to partake in, but there's no way to access culture until language is present to communicate that culture. And so I just second what Jason was saying about appreciating the work that you've put in, the credibility of your testimony. I loved Kim Clement used to say that your place of pain shall become your place of rain. And in your story, it's so clear that, you know, you are a walking testimony. You're living proof of how God can shift that that separatism thing into a true love for unity. And so I appreciate the authority that you're coming at it with. Yeah. I appreciate the wordsmithery, if you will, surrounding creating language that can make what I believe a lot of people believe in their heart to be true, but it hasn't been accessible yet. I love that Jesus says, you know, how can they believe unless they hear, right? Mm-hmm. And that word faith meaning a conclusion, what someone has concluded to be true. And sometimes we can know something to be true, but it hasn't become a conclusion. It hasn't become faith because we haven't been able to articulate it. So man, I'm super excited about what you're doing here, man.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, dude.
Yeah. The Aunt Betty's, to jump on what you were, by the way, there was a band called Aunt Betty's Ford. You know who that is?
I love that. No.
No.
Okay. Are they heavy metal?
No, it was, okay, it was, no. Yeah, sorry. It was close. It was garage, okay. You know,
yeah.
Anyway, but the Aunt Betty's of the world, I think they are tired. I think mm-hmm. we are in a space where I can look at my own circle of friends and relationships and look back at 2016 through 20, you know, through the pandemic,
yeah,
and see that there's more receptibility to having these conversations. But I want to ask you this, because there are also those who are banging the drum.
Yep.
Because I have a Twitter account. Dub, are you on Twitter?
No.
That's where they all move to. They're all on Twitter.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm being funny, but
that makes sense.
there are some leaders in the charismatic or in the evangelical world that mm-hmm. are banging the drum. Have you had interactions in that way? How do you navigate that? It's the same spirit. There's still no us or them.
Right.
But there's a challenge. There's a way by which to challenge. And I don't know if you've written a book that I imagine has probably caused some waves in your life.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How are you navigating that?
Yeah, well, a lot of the purveyors of American Christian nationalism or political combativeness or whatever it might be, there's a lot of money and power wrapped up in it. And when money and power are threatened, people usually behave in ways that they believe justified in order to protect their money and power and influence. This is kind of across the board, but as we're talking about this particular issue, you know, I'm 4 miles from where there's an organization that's now here in Arizona that's hosting monthly rallies with thousands of people. They do a big thing at the Civic Center. You know, 10,000 people, they say, are there. So there's a lot of money here and a lot of influence with purveyors of American Christian nationalism. And sometimes, you know, people will reach out through like the church email or their call, and they'll express themselves and their discontentment with the posture that we've taken. Usually it's kind of like, you know, you're promoting atheism or godless wokeism or CRT. Oh, my favorite was that we're imbibing a Luciferian spirit of fear. And so after I Googled Luciferian, which is like Lucifer, I was like, oh, okay, cool. So there's that. And that's, you know, it's kind of normal when you write something that's a little bit spicy. And
sure.
So I'm getting coaching from folks who've done similar things, and that's encouraging.
Yeah.
I've been to, like, some of them, I've been to some of their pastors' conferences, so I'm rubbing shoulders with a lot of my vocational peers. I went to one pastors' conference in 2022. They had over 500 pastors there because I wanted to learn, like, what are these leaders thinking? And most of the pastors I met were, like, true believers. Some of them seemed like they were in on the grift. A lot of the key leaders you can't get access to. So they're kind of, you know, they're in the back room. They don't publish their content. You try to get to them, they send you a representative. So I've reached out to some of the leaders here. Hey, can we get a meeting? Can we jump on a Zoom call? And you get kind of assigned to,
I got you. Yeah.
You know, an underling. For like, I don't know what word to use. It's just somebody, you know. And they're like, it's kind of like when you go, if you guys have ever done political advocacy and you go to like see a representative or a senator, but, and you're in their office, but you're with like the junior advisor to the, you know, whatever. So I've not been able to make human connections, although I would love to, especially for the ones who are in my community. But at the same time, I want to be wise knowing I think there's a lot of people who are just in on the grift. And the reason why I think that is a lot of the positions and convictions keep changing. And for leaders of integrity, I just don't see them fundamentally shifting their convictions so quickly to align with the way that the wind is blowing politically.
There's a, you know, I think you noted it, but you know, the American flag sells football games and cars.
Yes. Right.
You know, and it can also, put butts in seats.
It's a church growth model. I've heard some of the purveyors of American Christian nationalism explicitly say that this is the most effective church growth model in America in the last 50 years.
Oh my God.
So if you guys are familiar at all, this is super nerdy, like insider pastor baseball, but, the idea of the homogenous growth unit, that if you just pick one group of people and target them, you'll grow your church. This kind of came from, well, anyways, it's about 50-year-old idea, which is why you have a bunch of homogenous churches now. And they're really like a lot of the bigger churches are all the same people, which kind of is a contradiction to what you see in the New Testament church. anyways, this ain't about that. But the homogenous unit now is the political ideology and the tribal identity, more so than just wealthy, you know, white people or middle class, you know, football lovers. It's like, we're going to explicitly say from the stage that we are a patriotic, God-fearing Christian nationalist church, and 3,000 people walk in. And I've watched that happen to churches here in Phoenix. I've seen it all over the country. A person who maybe was pastoring a 100-person church says all the code words, and there's 1,000 people there in 4 months.
Dang. But then you got to, then you got to keep that thing going. Sorry.
What you win people with is what you win them to.
That's right.
And if you win them to anxiety and rage and discontentment, you have to keep them anxious, outraged, and discontent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's exhausting.
That's exhausting. I've been a part of that. I've seen that model. We have a lot of conversations, theological conversations about the nature of love, that there is no separation in the nature of love. And and yet you can build a church on preaching separation. Because then every week you get to be the go-between that they come back time and time again. But it's exhausting, and there's ultimately no true transformation. It's all bootstrap transformation, if you will. It's all, you know, it's not actually heart transformation, man. If I were sitting with you, which we are, but
we are sitting with each other.
We are sitting with each other, and I'm drinking coffee. But this is one of my questions, that if I feel like we're connected, man, like, you know, we would actually go out and have coffee, hang out. What's burning in your heart right now? Like, clearly this is.
Yeah.
But what's the thing you'd have to tell me, Jason, this is what God's showing me right now. Like, this is the thing.
There's this line in Ephesians that I'm struck by, the manifold wisdom of God. So manifold, like if you think about like a diamond that's got various cuts.
Yeah.
And if you hold up the prism or diamond to the light and the different things shine through, it's because it's manifold, many cut, many angled, multicolored, whatever. That the manifold wisdom of God is made known through the church. And the church is a bunch of misfits. And I am spending a lot of time meditating on how am I seeing the full array of the beauty of God in all these disparate people that I'm encountering on any given day. Wow. Some of whom I love to be with. Yeah. And it's kind of easy to see the beauty of God in them. And some of them, I don't ever want to see their stupid face again. and striving to practice the discipline of also looking for the manifold wisdom of God in them.
Come on,
yeah. And there's a beauty there if we have eyes to see, and I'm struck by it. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, Father, show me how you see him. As a prayer I've prayed often. And then when you get it, what you're talking about is that value for humanity, you know, that's the grace that's released. I love that, man. Yeah, I could spend a minute there.
Yeah.
I know Dub could.
Maybe just a little, yeah. Yeah, I work mainly in global government, but I have worked a little bit in federal government and on both sides of the aisle. And something that I came to grips with super early on was, if I'm going to represent, if I'm going to be a representative of my king, then I have to choose to agree with the way that he sees his children, whether I like him or not. And so the way that I teach people is, you know, pull up a picture of whichever politician it is that bugs you the most, and then just stare at it and say, Father, let me see them through your eyes. Share with me your original intent and design of who it is that you created them to be. And understanding that that honor, I honor because I'm honorable, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to earn my respect to look again. I'm going to honor the seed of who God created you to be. And if you have put in the work to grow the seed into the tree, then I'll respect you too. But I try to go into every meeting with any government official anywhere in the world, already having positioned my heart to respond to the original intent of who God created them to be, not to react to who they are choosing to be in the moment. And clearly you're operating from that same paradigm of, man, there may be some dirt on top, but let's brush that off and get to the gold. And anytime we have the ability to respond rather than to react, man, then we're operating from love rather than fear, and things get way easier.
Come on.
There's this line C.S. Lewis has, that you never meet an ordinary person.
Come on.
That every person is an expression of the divine right in front of you.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's good. That's a good way to shift into tacos.
There you go.
All right, brother. This is good. I think this is going to encourage a lot of folks, but we got to talk tacos, man. It's in the title.
I'm ready.
You know you're in Arizona.
I am.
So, I think you probably got some taco stories.
I have so many taco stories.
Did any of them take place at Cracker Barrel? That's the only
one. No, sir. No, that you never buy a taco at Cracker Barrel. Biscuits and gravy, eggs and bacon, the farm boy or the country boy, there's something where it's just like 14,000 calories. Oh, so good. Love a good Cracker Barrel. I thought the one that's coming to mind is, we have a chain and have for 20, 30 years, a chain of very small drive-through Mexican food restaurants, and they're all named differently, but it's Filiberto's, Rolberto's, Los Betos, all these kinds of things. And they're usually family-run. There's like two like bolted in tables outside that have been there for 30 years with gum on them. And like, there's no indoor eating. Sometimes it's just cash only. But growing up in Phoenix, so this is like high school years of the mid to late 90s, the only place that was open after like midnight was a Rolberto's.
Roberto.
And so many a night, I don't have one memory, I have many a memory, standing in front of the Rolberto's or Filiberto's, depending on where we were at in town, and there would be a line of 50 drunk, cranked out of their mind, just got off of a late shift, and we're just lining down the street waiting to put our order in for 5 rolled tacos for like $2.
Nice.
And I remember getting up to the window. I may or may not have been in any of those aforementioned categories at the time with my friends, and I realized I had $1. So I haggled with the person. Could I do one for like 2.5 rolled tacos? And I remember pulling out a comb from my pocket. and offering the comb and the dollar for all five rolled tacos. And I believe in my desperation, someone behind had pity and gave me a donation, which is the best nation in the world. And I walked away having paid for half of the full five rolled taco platter with the cheese mounded up and the little miniature quarter size salsa container. And I have often thought when I go out late night for rolled tacos, I wonder if they would take the comb today, if I could talk him into it today.
Well, this must have been before your skinhead days.
Yeah, slightly before. Yep.
Right, right, because of the comb. Good catch. Good catch, yep. Dub. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
before that, yeah. It was blonde bowl cut.
Oh.
Dang.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's the 90s, bro.
Better?
It's the 90s, bro.
It's the 90s. Yeah, okay. I made it through I happened to make it through the 90s without the blonde bowl cut, but you know, well, I'm just saying.
You know, it's character forming.
That's awesome.
It's like the Walmart version of a Zach Morris situation.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. In the 90s, I was the MC for a rapcore band because, you know, it's been new metal and rapcore had emerged on the scene. I grew up in South Dallas in the hood, so I've always been an MC. But back in the day, I remember I would bleach my hair and I would spike it. And I thought, you know, I looked like Chester from Linkin Park.
Yes,
but looking back, it was more like a off-brand Guy Fieri is. It was a bad move, but you know, hindsight's 20/20. So
it was Guy Ferrari.
Yeah,
that's right.
The Polish impersonator of Guy Fieri.
Oh my gosh!
Oh my god, that's awesome! I love it, man. Well, that's a taco story, brother.
There you go.
I don't know that you have the right amount of desperation to pull off a comb exchange now.
You really got to do it. I feel like you really got to sell it. There has to be some sort of empathy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I buy it. I'd just be like, dude, pull the other dollar out of your pocket.
Right,
come on.
Right, right. You're a grown up.
Hey, how do people find you? Tell us when the book's coming out.
Yeah. So Disarming Leviathan, Loving Your Christian Nationalist Neighbor, comes out on July 2nd, although I like to say it comes out on the 4th of July, but it comes out just in time for your 4th of July parties. It's available. It's being published through InterVarsity Press, so you could purchase it there. It's available for pre-order now at IVP's website and on Amazon. You can find the ministry at disarmingleviathan.com, and we're on Twitter, Facebook, and what's the thing on Instagram? The Threads. We're on Instagram. We're on all that stuff.
All right. All the socials.
All the socials. Yeah. Not TikTok, though. I haven't figured out how that's going to work.
Yeah. It sounds like you may not have to worry about that. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
As of the recording of this podcast.
That's right.
Yeah. Man, it's been an honor. It's been really good getting to know you. I think this book's going to encourage and help a lot of folks. And
I hope so.
Thankful that you could be on the podcast with us, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, myself, or our guests, you can go to afamilystory.org. You can also go to afamilystory.org if you'd like to give. This is a listener-supported podcast, and we are incredibly grateful for your generosity. Hey, we have a Facebook group, and it's pretty cool. Rethinking God with Tacos. You can join us over there. Lots of incredible conversation and community taking place on that page. And you can also follow us on all the socials, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and others. Hey, I'd love it also if you went on iTunes and left a review or shared or tweeted or liked the podcast. Let your friends know that this is a good place to hear about the love of God. I pray grace and wonder over your day.